Good morning and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Thank you, everybody, for your patience. I'm going to try to bring Sherry in. If someone could text me and make sure you can all hear her, that would be very helpful. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Oh, my gosh.
I can hear you.
Oh, my gosh. I've been on every single time, and somehow it just, you know, if say I'm on to ask you a question, blah, 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 nothing. So
okay,
I
well,
apologize.
You can be heard.
All
you
right.
Can be heard.
Oh,
so that's
my
good.
Gosh. I'm
right.
So sorry.
All right. So our assignment from yesterday, our definition of a subpersonality aspect of ego is a collection of beliefs and assumptions and projections with a unique worldview and distinct language. Take each of the descriptors from the previous assignment and begin to flesh out each I such that you can recognize each as a distinct personality. Write down the language each uses, what they project onto others and the world and you, and from that get a sense of each personality's worldview, RL what you see. As you work with this, make sure you stay on topic, confining the exploration of the specifics of what you're looking at this month. All right, let's get our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Anna from San Carlos.
Hello, Anna.
Hello. Really happy to be here.
Me too.
So, yeah. It's funny. It's like whenever you have the technical details on this side, it's sort of checking, you know, did I do that? And I guess through that process, you can see, I could see a lot about my process, you know, like, is it something
uh-huh.
I did? What did I, you know, which comes up in relationship. So it's definitely something I've been looking at with the relationship stuff. And I think with the new baby and the toddler, it's not like I can practice in the way that I, you know, could, you know, when I had large chunks of uninterrupted time and was well rested.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been nice in a way because it's, I think because it's nice to hear like people on the show, you know, talking about, you know, doing what they can do when they can. And
mm-hmm.
having practiced for a while, it's nice that I'm not going to turn, you know, not being able to practice in the way that I think I should practice into a club that self-hate can use against me.
Right, because those are two very different things, aren't they? There's
yeah.
the way you would like to be able to practice, and then there's ego telling you how you should be practicing.
Yeah. And there's, you know, it's like the, and I've noticed this in relationships too, so this is coming up, is it's like if someone, an external person, or like, so the internal process is there's like a longing for wanting to things to, you know, wanting to have, you know, some more time or wanting to, you know, wanting to go on retreat or have like, you know,
be rested.
Chunks of time by myself. Yeah, be well rested, sleep, you know, when I want to sleep and eat when I want to eat. And there's that longing. And then there's like the defensiveness of like, oh, but, you know, I chose this and this is really good. And, you know, so it's like it kind of causes it to shut up the emotion, you know. It's like whatever
mm-hmm.
it is that's arising,
mm-hmm.
there's like the defensiveness
mm-hmm.
to shut it down. And
mm-hmm.
That's definitely a dominant subpersonality that comes up in relationship where a partner might say something like, hey, I really, you know, really love to feel appreciated. Could you show me some more appreciation for what it is that I'm doing? And there's an immediate, like, defensiveness that comes up of, like, I do show you appreciation. Oh, why do you need appreciation? You're so insecure. You know, it's like the whole...
how about appreciating me?
I know. What about appreciating me? I'm doing as much as I... Exactly. And it's the same kind of thing as it arises in me, right? Of it just, like... I don't know. Maybe it's just like a, I don't know. It's a shutting down of the other emotion. but it's really defensiveness. I mean, the purpose is not to shut down the other person's emotion. The purpose is to make sure that I'm okay, and you know, and a feeling of like, I don't know, that I'm doing something wrong, and this person just maybe pointed it out or something.
Right. Well, and as we've been looking at through this particular exercises or content,
I can't hear anything. I don't know if it's my ear.
Uh-oh. Did I go away again?
I hear some. Hello? I hear like your voice now, kind of, yeah. But I don't know if it's me or.
I'm Deborah. Can you hear me, Anna?
I can hear you, yeah, but you're strobing. But, again, I don't know if it's me or.
No, you are, Sherry, this is Ashmi, you're strobing. Can you put yourself on speaker, perhaps?
Is that better?
Not really.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to just guess that this is a message for me to turn this over to you because.
Okay.
Clearly.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Ashmi. Sorry about that, everybody.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks, Sherry.
So, Anna, I think we're. Let me just reflect so we could catch up on what you were saying.
Okay.
That the defensiveness is a way not of shutting the other person down, but really a reflex in order to ensure that you're okay, that you haven't done something wrong.
Yeah.
And it's so good to see, right? That it's so good to see because there's so much compassion in that.
Yeah, there is. And, it's I do it and I see other people do it. And there's like a frustration when it comes in my direction because it feels like it's, you know, shutting down my emotion when I'm identified because it's like when I'm asking for something, sometimes it's like a pleading, you know.
Yes.
Trying to get something from someone else. Yeah.
Yeah, well, in the light of the exercise that we're doing in terms of subpersonality, it's so important to identify the orientation, right? And the orientation that you just identified is defensiveness. In her worldview, she feels like she's doing a lot, and someone is asking something more of her than she could possibly give at this moment. And in her inability to meet that need, there's that defensive reaction of, well, what about me?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that when we recognize that, we can take care of that need in ourselves because that's the only place in which we can take care of it. Before we could, you know, it's what Sherry says about Cheryl and Marshmallow and Sherry Huber. If the awareness is not there, then the person who has the need is going to act out. And so till we resolve that need in ourselves, we give ourselves a pass, right? When that need shows up and that frustration shows up and the acting out shows up, and what we do is take care of that in me before I'm required to or held to a standard of having to meet somebody else's needs, whoever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and the tricky thing is, like, in a circumstance where it feels like there's just a lot asked of me, there's a belief that the need is stuck, you know? But the need is not stuck.
The need
is the
what?
Orientation.
Oh,
it's like things, you know?
Exactly.
Like, I need things. Like, I need sleep or I need, like, someone to help me, you know? And there might be some of that, but I think the deeper need is, like, is like nurturing and acknowledgement and caring and because if I just go and get like a bunch of like help in a way, it's not really meeting the need.
Yes, and so important to recognize, right? Because the suffering is caused, as you identified, with the lack of acceptance and acknowledgement of where you are. You are maxed out. Right? There's nothing you can give. And yet this external has no awareness of that and is demanding something without recognizing where you are. And so, you're vulnerable if you don't have sleep and food and everything else and all the stuff that takes care of you on a physical level. But really what your need is an emotional one to acknowledge where you are. And so that really is something we can give ourselves, right? So that's where we practice with it.
So this is a really helpful, all these different content areas, it's like, it's really helpful.
It is.
It's really helpful to have this radio show whenever we're going through this. For everyone who's, for you.
Anna, you're starting to break up.
Having the recording, it's really helpful too, because if the schedule is so that you can't, just the way it's set up, I just feel really grateful because it kind of keeps me on task even when I can't, you know, or I'm not
actually
doing things.
Well, there's some concrete way in which you're still participating, right?
Yeah.
And that's important to counter the first thing that the voices were saying is you don't practice the way you should.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So thank you very much. Take care, Anna. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Let's get our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Colin?
Oh, hello. It's Colin here. Yes, hello. I've got a bit lost with this one at the moment, so I'm hoping perhaps you'll be able to get me back on track a bit. So we were looking at relationships, and what was coming up was that I really wanted to go back and look at food, and I think Sherry was saying yesterday about, well, perhaps look at one's relationship with food, and it sort of threw me into sort of confusion, really, because am I looking at this or am I looking at that? And I'm sort of just been a bit sort of stuck with that today. And I'm switching on the voice recorder and kind of nothing's happening. And I just wonder if you could offer me some guidance to get me back on track.
The relationships is such a broad topic, right, Colin? And so then there's that, okay, well, what do I take? It's what Jen was talking to us about yesterday, right, when you have such a broad area. And so what's occurring to you is to look at your relationship with food. And so let's just maybe explore this a little bit. What about food? Do you want to, because food's just the content area, and so you're exploring your relationship with food, maybe the question to ask is, where do you suffer in your relationship with food? Because that's really what we're exploring, right? The process of suffering around it. Do you eat too much? Do you eat too little? Do you not eat what you should eat, within quotes, right?
Absolutely. So it's eating too much, but I was just sort of seeing that I'm not really enjoying the food. I'm not even there for it, that I'm kind of just away with ego the whole time about what I should be eating and shouldn't be eating, and going unconscious and not eating all this really bland food so that I won't put on weight, and just seeing that there's a whole load of suffering there, and that somehow I'm just being completely, it's kind of like I'm doing the right in quote thing, but it's like it's an ego is just taking over, and it's kind of that's not really what I want to do.
Right, and so the beauty about that, right, Colin, is that you've identified that overeating is where you're suffering, and a lack of enjoyment is where you're suffering. So then you just apply the process that we're going through to that, right? So what do the voices say when you eat too much? What are the subpersonality, what are the beliefs in those voices? From the beliefs, can you identify the subpersonalities that are involved? So let's just say a voice says, you know, you're just doing what you should do, right? What's the belief around that? When I do something that I'm supposed to do, perhaps I will get an experience that I'm not getting, right? That's the belief. what that world, what's the world worldview of that sub-personality. So if you follow the steps of the assignment, there's a way in which you can look at any process of suffering, including your relationship with food when you don't enjoy it.
Yes, yes. So I think perhaps I need to go back a couple of days and just go back over those. It's just, I think conditioning sort of threw me into sort of confusion, really. So I was looking at the assignment and it's, well, should I be doing it or shouldn't I? And a few days have sort of passed by where I wasn't. So I think that's probably this would be a good place to just go back and repeat the last two or three days to get myself back on track with that, I think. Exactly.
And of course, we'll have the opportunity to examine that process you just went through. You could fit that in, right? Relating to an assignment when I don't know. Relating to anything when I don't know how to choose. Right, because that's another place of suffering. Because what I heard you say is, you're not allowed to participate. You're not allowed to do something because you don't know. It keeps you in the position of this or that or anything else, and then it's like I don't know, so I don't do.
Right. Oh yes. That's. Yeah, that feels like that's quite a big deal with me. Yeah, in a lot of different areas, actually. I don't know what to do. Yeah. Oh, okay. So that's a big thing.
That's an interesting one, right? Relating to something you cannot make a decision about is as good as examining my relationship with food when I don't enjoy it.
Yeah. Okay. So there's that to look at as well. Yeah. Yes. I don't know what to do. That's something quite often I hear. Yeah. I don't know what to do. And it sort of paralyzes me really into not doing anything actually. Yeah. That's the process I'm in here, isn't it? Yeah. Oh gosh. So well. You know, it's another month, another whole load of stuff to see. Thank you for that. I really appreciate it. There's just so much to see every month. Thank you.
Right, and we can always start with the process we're in.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, that's so helpful. That really is to do that. All right. Well, thanks for that. It's really helpful. Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye-bye. All right, next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Aloha, this is Laura.
Hey, Laura.
Hi. Sorry about the background noise. Nothing I can do about it, so
it's
this
cow gets... It's for the course today, Laura.
Okay. So this has been so interesting, and what I've noticed about this particular content area compared to the others is there are five subpersonalities that are really active, and usually in the other ones there weren't quite as many that I could identify and kind of tease out. And so I chose my relationship with my husband. And as soon as I did, the first assignment was to jot down. Well, it was like conditioning took over that relationship, and there was nothing I could see good about it, which is when the five the five aspects came up. And it was like for a number of days, it was like that was the focus of what was wrong with this relationship. And mm-hmm. so that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Just
Right. Yes, because I don't know if it's your experience, Laura, but it's certainly mine, that where you love the most, there's most hate, right? Because mm-hmm. it has to be. That's the way you contain to your ability to be unconditional love or to love, right? That the ramping up of ego happens the most in the relationships that are closest to your heart. So it's not unpredictable. It's just very natural, because that's the place of the most intimacy, and therefore that's the place that ego can plant the most separation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And to step back occasionally and watch it happening was, because there are times when I notice that both of us are acting out of conditioning, and usually I can just like step back and say, okay, I'm going to just take a break here and go and get centered before I come back and maybe continue this conversation we've had so many times before, and maybe not. But this time it was like an onslaught, and I loved it.
Yes, no, because the practitioner says, okay, this is conditioning revealing, exposing itself to me. This is my best opportunity to be free of it, right? So bring it on, let me look. And so rather than, yes, so there's an onslaught, and here with complete conscious awareness, I'm going into the fray, and wow, here are the five sub-personalities. What do they say? Mm-hmm. What's their worldview? Why is their suffering being caused by the conflict of these perspectives? Let me bring awareness to that. Because in doing that, there's a way in which, as we were talking with Anna, you get to understand the needs that are not being met, the needs that are, you know, all of those things that you need to take care of in yourself before engaging with your husband, right?
Absolutely. And so the one that is the most slippery for me is this spiritual person who says, if you were the right person, you wouldn't be having these feelings and you wouldn't be thinking these thoughts, because a spiritual person doesn't engage in those.
Yes. Oh, my God, this is one of those show of hands in the room kind of experiences, right? Because that's exactly, I mean, what does ego know about spiritual people? Right? I mean, and so it doesn't matter what the content is. If you were the right person, you would, is the standard that we're held to. And the most important aspect of that is to go, how do you know? Or what? Why is that the case? Right? I mean, if you ask anybody who's on a spiritual path, there are no standards. We never know. We're just trying to be present in the moment and doing our best. And no matter what we do, we open to the love there is in the moment. Right?
Right.
So the belief that if you were the right person, that's all you're seeing. You're seeing that there's an unconscious way in which you're caused to suffer because of an unexamined assumption.
Right. And the other thing that this particular aspect is doing is saying, shut down your feelings and just pretend that everything is fine, even if it's not, which is another unexamined belief, because, of course, everything is fine no matter what's going on.
Well, yes, and more importantly, you are feeling something. So not pretending you're not feeling it doesn't stop you from feeling it.
Right, yeah.
It is if you're present to what's going on for you, then you're going to feel whatever it is that you're feeling. So you might as well accept it, right, and move from there. But repressing or suppressing it is a classic ego tactic for you to abandon yourself to some ego standard which just causes you to suffer some more.
Wow. Yeah, I see that. Absolutely. It's pretty tricky.
It is. It absolutely is. And so the whole process that we're looking at here is really that. So you identify, and the stage of the process we're in is you identify those sub-personalities. You identify their worldview, right? For this particular person, you're not the right person because you should not have these feelings. So pretend you don't have these feelings. Then we delve into what are the beliefs, because I project if you explore, what is it that you get if you're the right person? What is it that you get if you don't show your feelings, right? There's a promise in that, that some person is falling for. So what is the need of that person? Really, that ego promises she doesn't know and she never gets.
Right, right. And it might be just as simple as acceptance.
That's right. This is how we're seen. And clearly, if you're pretending, you're certainly not available to communicate that to the other person or ask for what you need because you're not in touch with it yourself. You're not allowed to be.
Right, right. Wow, lots of stuff to look at.
Exactly. That's all we're doing, right? Looking, not believing, but looking.
Wow, thank you so much.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, all right. That brings us to the end of the show. Apologies for the technology issues. And our assignment for today, draw portraits of the aspects of ego you have seen. Jot down what each says. Record and listen. Take care, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.